This is The Legal Lounge from Lanyon Bowdler Solicitors, where you'll hear about many aspects of law in England and Wales with special guests, industry experts and local charities. Here's your host, Amanda Jones.
Hello and welcome to The Legal Lounge, where we now release new episodes every Monday. If you haven't heard previous shows, there's plenty of content for you if you're going through a divorce, want to know more about claiming for injuries, or you're training to be a lawyer. You can listen to these shows on your favourite podcast app and get more information by visiting lblaw.co.uk/podcast. In this episode, Emma Deering and Charlotte Williams look at the structure of wills. People often come to us saying they just need a simple will, but during the course of the initial meeting, it becomes clear that their estate is more complex than they think. Emma and Shonid use scenarios to explain a variety of situations.
Hello and welcome to our podcast today. I'm Emma Deering and I'm an associate in the private client team. I deal with wills, lasting powers of attorney, inheritance, tax planning and estate administration. And I'm here with my colleague, Shonid.
I'm a solicitor in the private client department. I deal with the same things as Emma has listed. Together we make the private client team in Conwy.
Today's podcast we've titled, I Just Want a Simple Will. And the reason behind that is most clients, when they call on a speculative basis, say that they just want a simple will. I just want to say here that all wills that we prepare are prepared on a bespoke basis and they're tailored to clients' individual needs and circumstances. There are some circumstances that would lead us to suggest that clients may need a more sophisticated will structure, be this because of the additional protection that it offers or flexibility that's afforded by it, or the benefits of a IHT strategy will. When I say IHT, I mean inheritance tax.
The type of format that our meetings take is usually we would ask clients about their background information so that we have the full picture and the full family background. So questions we would ask would be whether they are married, whether they have any children and whether they have any grandchildren. We would then ask about the assets in the family's estate, again, so that we have a full picture of what we're working with, also so that we can provide the clients with inheritance tax advice. So I'll just briefly provide some explanation on inheritance tax. Each individual has a nil rate band allowance of £325,000, and that is the tax-free allowance available to individuals in the UK free of tax before inheritance tax is payable at a death rate of 40%. There is the spousal exemption available for married couples or couples in a civil partnership. There are also certain reliefs available on certain assets, and we will go into that a little bit further as we go through some examples that we have. So the first example, we're going to use a scenario whereby Mr. and Mrs. Jones have come in to see Emma and I. They are a married couple in their mid to late 30s. Their situation is that they have four children and they are young children and they're all children of Mr. and Mrs. Jones. Assets-wise, they have a property that is worth approximately £300,000, which is jointly owned by them, and they still have a mortgage on that property. In terms of other assets, they have savings of approximately £30,000.
So if they came in to see me and I'd taken that information from them as to their personal circumstances and their finances, and they were explaining to me that it is their wish that they want everything to go to the survivor on the first death, with perhaps provision on the second death for it to be split equally between the children at 18. There are no red flags here that would make me suggest anything other than perhaps a standard will would be suitable for them. So really, I could explain to them about discretionary trust wills, but based on the value of their assets, I wouldn't be opposed to preparing a standard will for them. But if we move on from that scenario and add on to it, so say Mr. and Mrs. Jones are actually in their late 60s, and this is a second marriage for Mr. and Mrs. Jones, and although they have four children, those four children are not of the marriage together. Mrs. Jones has two children from a previous marriage, and Mr. Jones has two children from a previous marriage. They have the same sort of assets, so they have a house worth £300,000, but let's say it's mortgage-free this time, and let's say their savings have doubled to £60,000, for example. just on that information alone, I would be suggesting that perhaps a more sophisticated will strategy would be better for them.
Some things that they could be thinking about is the risk of the survivor changing the will, especially if there are children from separate marriages. So it would be appropriate at this stage perhaps to talk about what we refer to as a life interest trust will. This is where we have a will gifting maybe half of the property or all of the assets, if appropriate, into a trust on the first death to protect the assets for the children from the first marriage. What that means is a trust is created on the first death and then those assets are protected until the second death. And so it makes clients feel a little bit more at ease making these kinds of wills because they know that those assets are protected for their own children.
Because what happens normally is obviously they're married now to one another, but they want to ensure that although their spouse is catered for and that they are looked after, that ultimately, I suppose, their interest in the property or their estate ultimately goes to their own children, if you like. The same sort of will structure we would potentially use as well if people were concerned about care fees. I often get clients come and see me and they are concerned about the payment of care fees. They usually say that, you know, I'm quite happy to contribute towards the cost of my care. You know, I accept that these fees have got to be paid, but what I don't want is all my estate dissipated on the payment of care fees and there being nothing left over for my children at the end of the day. In Wales, and that's where Sionad and I practice because we're from the Conway office, there are different rules for the capital limit for care fees than there are in England. So in Wales, if you have assets in excess of £50,000, then you have to fully fund the cost of your care unless you have what's called a primary health need. So most people would fully fund the cost of their care. In England, the capital limit is lower, it's £23,500. Often where clients are concerned about the payment of care fees, then we may suggest a will structure that allows for some protection against all of the estate being dissipated in this way. And how this would work is, say they own the property in their joint names, there's two ways in which you can jointly own property. One is beneficial joint tenants, which means that if one of the owners passes away, the survivor automatically inherits that deceased person's share. Or you hold it as what's called tenants in common, which means each party owns an individual share in the property and can gift that under terms of their will. So in this scenario, if they were trying to protect some of the estate from the payment of care fees, then perhaps what you would have is you'd have a life interest trust. You would sever the joint tenancy in the property, so it's held as tenants in common. And then each party in their will would say that they gift their share in the home to the surviving spouse for them to be able to occupy the home for their lifetime, but that ultimately when that property is sold, their half share would go to their own children. And what that means in reality from the payment of care fees is that, say, Mrs. Jones passes away, her half share goes into the trust for Mr. Jones to be able to reside there for his lifetime. If Mr. Jones then goes into care, when the local authority undertake the financial assessment to ascertain what assets Mr. Jones has for the purpose of funding his care fees, he only owns a half share in the property. He doesn't own the other half. So the other half share value of the property, if you like, is protected from the payment of those fees.
So it's a good type of will to have for both scenarios, I guess. So when clients do come in to see us, we would provide them with that advice, and care home fee planning may not be something that they've even thought of. And it might not be appropriate in all cases, but it is something that we discuss with them. Moving on to another scenario, and we're going to change it to Mr. and Mrs. Williams. And Mr. and Mrs. Williams are a farming family. They're married to each other. They have four children and they are young adults, some are teenagers. They have a farmhouse and 100 acres. They're dairy farmers. Only one of the children currently farms the land. So they've come in and they don't really know what they want to do, but they think they want to gift everything to each other. What advice would you give them?
If they'd come in to see me and that's what they wanted to do, then obviously you have to take the client's views on board and then give them some options that are available. So in the scenario you suggest, obviously they're married, so they will benefit from the spousal exemption, etc., on any assets that pass to one another. But there are some other reliefs here that Mr. and Mrs. Williams would qualify for. So from what you've said, they would be able to claim what's called agricultural property relief. So agricultural property relief, in general terms, we refer to it as APR, and provided certain conditions are met, then you would be able to claim agricultural property relief at 100%. And those are that there is agricultural property, i.e. the land, the 100 acres and the farmhouse. It's been owned by Mr. and Mrs. Williams for at least the last 2 years if they're farming it themselves, or 7 if they are letting out any of the land on perhaps a informal grazing agreement. The agricultural property is being used for agricultural purposes and it's not up for sale or anything like that. So it's only the agricultural aspect of it. So if we take that in basic terms, then if Mr. and Mrs. Williams are farming the land themselves with the assistance of perhaps one child, then the agricultural value of the land would attract agricultural property relief at 100%. They're living in the farmhouse, and provided that's character appropriate and meets all the other necessary tests, which I won't go into in too much detail here because it's complicated, then that would also attract agricultural property relief. If they made wills whereby they provide for all of their estate to pass to one another on the first death, then their estates qualify for spouse exemption. And HMRC wouldn't look at the agricultural property relief aspect. So what we would always advise clients is perhaps a will whereby the assets that qualify for agricultural property relief, or indeed business property relief, perhaps are given to either individuals that don't qualify for spouse exemption, or perhaps into what we would call a agricultural / business property relief trust. So you would gift the assets into that trust, which would mean that on the death of the first party, you would have to apply for a grant of probate, and you would also have to submit an inheritance tax account to HMRC, and HMRC would have to confirm at that point that they accept that the land and property does qualify for agricultural property relief, and therefore at that time you have been able to crystallise that relief, which is really very important, particularly at this stage, because there's always so much talk from the government about what they're doing about agricultural property relief and whether they're going to withdraw it altogether or whether they're going to make any changes. So at least if you've banked it at this stage, it's done and you've confirmed that the land and property qualifies. The other thing is that those assets would also be going into a trust. And as you said, Mr. and Mrs. Williams farm the land with one child, but the other children, we don't know whether they're going to be farming the land with them at a later date or whether they're not. So putting that land into trust has other benefits, doesn't it, Shauna?
With the type of trust that you're referring to, a discretionary trust, there would be a pool of beneficiaries and they would be potential beneficiaries of the trust. And so it doesn't mean that they are immediately entitled to the assets within the trust. So especially when there are young children or young adults whereby the families don't really know what their intention is in the future, they don't know whether they're going to be helping on the farm or whether they're going to have their own career, it is a really good option in terms of gifting your assets, because you can leave a letter of wishes to go with a discretionary trust, which would explain the wishes and intentions of that person leaving their estate to say exactly what they would want. A letter of wishes is also really good because you can change that when your circumstances change. So let's say, for example, you make the discretionary trust will with a letter of wishes that is appropriate at the time, and then in 5 to 10 years' time, things have changed considerably, and then there's two of them farming, and maybe two of them have gone to university, then you have more of an idea as to how you want to distribute your estate. And that letter of wishes can then be amended to, along with the changing circumstances.
Yeah, so with a discretionary trust, it offers a great deal of flexibility because, as Shauna says, you have a pool of beneficiaries and nobody within that pool can lay any claim to the assets within the trust. Your letter of wishes may well say that, you know, you want those assets to be transferred to the spouse once HMRC have accepted that agricultural property relief is available, or it may say that, you know, if such and such son or daughter is still farming the land, then you would want them to be able to have that land, but you would want something else to happen to the other assets. Often you find with farming families that it's very difficult for them to treat all the children equally, and so what they're trying to achieve between them is fairness, and often that's why a discretionary trust is relevant, because it's more flexible option.
A really good point, and what I tell a lot of clients is that equal doesn't always mean fair, especially when it comes to farming families, because a scenario that we come across quite regularly is that one of the children has farmed the land and lived there for their entire lifetime, and the other children have gone away and made a life for themselves and a career. And so, like I say, equal is not always fair. And another really good thing with the discretionary trust and the flexibility that Emma explained is the fact that there is space for inheritance tax planning after that first death. And you can sit down with a solicitor, your accountant and other advisors, and see what is the best approach to take at that time. If a standard will is made with a scenario, then there is really quite limited space for planning. And so we would advise clients with this type of scenario to make a discretionary trust will.
Yeah, it just offers the most flexibility for scenarios where perhaps you have assets that do attract certain relief, such as agricultural property relief or business property relief, or indeed if you have complex family circumstances. If you know, for example, that one of your children is about to get divorced, you might want to update your will so as to ensure your estate goes into a discretionary trust so that those assets are not received by them absolutely and taken into account in those divorce proceedings. It just offers more flexibility. That's not to say that the money won't be paid out to them, it just will be paid out at a more appropriate stage. And then I think the last scenario we wanted to touch on really was those that are not married.
The scenario that we have here is Mr. Jones and Miss Williams. Like Emma said, they're not married. They might have children together, or they might have children from previous marriages. And of course, this scenario here is where, from planning perspective, it takes a lot more thought and consideration. You would usually sit down with the clients to, again, assess their whole situation and to see what their intention is. But the most important thing here to note is that unmarried couples, they do not benefit from the spousal exemption when it comes to inheritance tax, and so there is no transferable nil rates band or residence nil rate band, and so it does take a lot more planning, doesn't it, when couples come to us when they're not married.
Yeah, a lot more thought is having to be taken into consideration in dealing with the tax aspects, really, because they only have the one nil rate band available to them, which, as Sean had said earlier, is set at £325,000. So it just takes a lot more thought, doesn't it? And of course, they don't have an automatic right to benefit under the intestacy rules either. So if one party passes away, the survivor of a partnership, whether they've been living together or whatever the case may be, do not have the automatic right. So I think it's just really to show that it is really important to get legal advice when you want to prepare a will. Obviously, we are aware that there are will writers online where you can prepare a will online. You can go to WH Smith's and buy your own and write it yourself. But when doing that, you're not getting any of the advice that we would give you during the course of that initial meeting. So you're not really able to make an informed decision about the type of will that you would really want to prepare if you're not given the options that are available to you, really. Always just seek that advice.
Definitely. And if you seek the advice, solicitors are going to ask you questions that you would never have considered yourself. It is just so important to meet with a solicitor to explain to them if you do think you want a simple will. That may not always be the case.
Thank you to Emma and Seanad for sharing their expertise, yet more proof that lawyers don't bite. If you have a legal issue you'd like me to put to our team to cover in an upcoming episode, please let me know by visiting lblaw.co.uk/podcast. Thanks for listening. If you found the conversation useful, please remember to follow or subscribe on your app so you're notified of new releases when they come out every Monday. Speak to you next week.
That was The Legal Lounge from Lanyon Bowdler Solicitors. Visit lblaw.co.uk/podcast for helpful resources, and please do follow or subscribe on your podcast app so you never miss an episode.